evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, February 23rd, 2017. Aid workers are asking donors to help hundreds of thousands of people with disabilities who need special attention in South Sudan.
We also urge the international community not to forget the needs of the estimated 1.8 million people with disabilities living in South Sudan, who are too often invisible during such crises.
And thousands of families from South Sudan continue to stream over the border into Uganda, straining the abilities of the UN agency.
The refugees that are arriving are reporting tales of horrific and barbaric violence that's taking place in South Sudan. Armed groups are attacking civilians, in some cases killing family members in front of people's very eyes. And houses are being burnt down.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Pope Francis says millions of people in South Sudan risk being condemned to death by famine and war. The Pope described the conflict in South Sudan as pitting family members against one another, a situation made worse by severe food crisis. Speaking at his weekly audience at St. Peter's Square, the pontiff called on urgent humanitarian aid. He said that, quote, "Now, more than ever, there should be a commitment by everyone to contribute food aid and allow it to reach suffering populations." South Sudan's President Salva Kiir has promised safe access for aid agencies trying to reach those in need. Famine has been declared in two counties in Unity State, but much of the country faces food insecurity due to violence and drought. An international disability and development organization, Light for the World, says some 1.8 million South Sudanese with disabilities are at risk of being neglected. The group is asking for financial aid to help people living with disabilities in South Sudan. Light for the World says 250,000 people with disabilities are living in IDP camps and need special consideration in South Sudan. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Rehabilitation expert Sophia Mohammed says her organization is reminding aid agencies not to forget people living with disabilities in IDP camps while distributing relief items.
We also urge the international community not to forget the needs of the estimated 1.8 million people with disabilities living in South Sudan, who are too often invisible during such crises.
The government and three UN agencies declare that famine exists in two counties in Unity States. Mohammed says joint efforts among agencies should be carried out to ensure that people with disability are not excluded during such crises.
People with disability, as well as other vulnerable groups such as children and older people, may be unable to reach the main sites for food distribution or aerial dropped packages. And we need to do everything to our power to ensure they are not forgotten during this terrible crisis.
Esther Ikere Aluzai, Undersecretary at South Sudan's Ministry of Gender, admits that the ongoing conflict has increased the number of people with disability in the country.
The number of persons with disability has been increasing for the last two incidents of conflict, and we know that 85% of persons with disability live in the rural areas, with only 15% of them in the urban centers. So if you take these statistics and look thoroughly through, you can see that the number of persons with disability has increased tremendously in this country.
Aluzai says even among the disabled, there are those who are much more vulnerable.
And you know that conflict affects women disproportionately than men. So in such context where they flee from their own homes, they lost their livelihoods, they lost their properties, for them to resettle and for them to be even look into their needs, they have different needs that need to be taken into consideration.
The Undersecretary urged aid workers to give South Sudanese people with disabilities priority consideration in their operations. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
And in Kampala, the UN Refugee Agency says families continue to stream into Uganda. UNHCR officials say more than 1,300 people arrived each day, bringing the total number of new arrivals in February to more than 56,000. UNHCR spokesman in Uganda says humanitarian agencies and the government of Uganda are facing enormous obstacles in trying to provide food and shelter for the hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese refugees fleeing violence in South Sudan. For VOA News, Munguma Devsrakarinj has the details from Juba.
UNHCR spokesman Charles Yaxley says at least 100,000 South Sudanese have fled to Uganda since the beginning of the year. Nearly 10,000 arrived last week alone because the violence continues.
The refugees that are arriving reporting tales of horrific and barbaric violence that's taking place in South Sudan. We understand that armed groups are attacking civilians, in some cases killing family members in front of people's very eyes. Houses are being burnt down. Women and girls are being sexually assaulted and raped.
Yaxley says the majority of the refugees are women and children, mainly from the Equatorial region. He says some refugees are coming in from the Democratic Republic of Congo.
We are receiving some new arrivals into Uganda who are reaching the country having traveled through DR Congo. Now that eastern part of DR Congo is itself suffering incredible instability in recent times. And yet it appears that the South Sudanese refugees still find traveling through DR Congo preferable than to risk using these exit roads where armed groups are believed to be present.
Uganda is now home to at least 1 million South Sudanese refugees. Refugees receive a plot of land to build a home and grow crops when they arrive. But Yaxley says UNHCR needs more than $500 million to provide for all South Sudanese refugees so they can create new settlement camps, set up schools and buy non-food items. But Yaxley says the steady stream of refugees will continue so long as the fighting continues. Is urging the international community to step in.
It's also key that international leaders who have influence over the key players in the South Sudan conflict, it's vital that they use that influence to bring the warring parties to the negotiating table in order to engage in dialogue and to urgently bring an end to the bloodshed. Only that way will we be able to stop the rise of the number of South Sudanese refugees, but also will we be able to create the conditions where it will be safe for those who've already fled to return home.
The largest number of refugees on the African continent now come from South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Last year, President Salva Kiir asked IDPs sheltering in camps around the country to return to their villages and take part in a national dialogue. But many IDPs at the UN camp in Juba say they still don't feel safe outside UN protection of civilian sites. The internal displaced persons are calling on the warring parties to implement the 2015 peace deal so that IDPs can return home. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
President Salva Kiir this week instructed all governors and military leaders to provide necessary conditions for the safe return of internal displaced persons to their homes. But IDPs say they are not going home until they feel safe. Stephen Lornyak, the former health minister in the former Upper Nile State, says unless the warring parties commit themselves to fully implement the peace agreement and achieve a lasting peace, he will continue to stay in the UN camps. Lor, who was also a lawmaker in Khartoum prior to South Sudan's independence, says he doesn't trust the country's security forces.
We cannot go home because we lost trust and we are not quite sure about security so that we can go to our houses. If there is a peace in South Sudan, this is whereby we can go home and there will be a lasting peace in South Sudan.
Lor says he was separated from his family and has not been in touch with them since fighting broke out in Juba in December 2013. Another IDP, James Mabor, says beside the ongoing insecurity across the country, he cannot return home because he lost all his belongings. Mabor, a father of four, says even if South Sudan was at peace now, IDPs like him need financial help to return home.
We are insecure, even at the camps here. We would only accept to go back when there is a comprehensive peace. The peace there will handle our own obligations because we were IDPs are displaced. Our places are destroyed, properties lost and burnt, and we cannot go back without peace.
Eliza Joseph, another IDP who has lived at the UN's Protection of Civilian Site in Juba for 4 years now, says she would love to return to her home but fears the insecurity in her hometown. She says another reason she cannot leave the IDP camps is because there is nothing to eat in her rural home.
We want peace and let our place be safe, free from conflict, without any violence. Then we will return. Like in our hometown, Lo, a week ago, there was fighting and some attacks. People fought and civilians were killed. Now we won't return to our place. We are hearing that there is fighting there and civilians were killed. Do you think we will return to where there is conflict?
Monica Hilario, a mother of three, says she was displaced during fighting in Wau in June of last year. Hilario, who now lives in an IDP camp in Wau, says she prefers to move to another country for her safety rather than return to her village.
I can't go if I am not sure that the peace agreement is implemented, that there is total peace. And me, I can't just rush going home because I don't know what my situation is. Even if I was to have money, I was thinking to go to somewhere else. Till when the situation come down, then I come back.
Yesterday, the UN Secretary General's Special Representative in South Sudan, David Shearer, said the IDPs should return home voluntarily when they feel it's safe to return.
We're not pushing them out, but what we need to be able to do is to establish the conditions which would encourage them to go back. And there are two major conditions. One is that they feel secure physically, from a security point of view, that when they are going back, they are going back to their homes and are not going to be in threat of their or risk of their lives.
The UN says it is hosting nearly 230,000 IDPs seeking safety in its 6 protection of civilian sites across South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a UN advisor says SPLA soldiers must respect the law. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you have any regrets?
I would not call them regrets because each and every opportunity or mistake in life opens a door for another awesome thing in life. So I think I would regard them as opportunities, not regrets. So I have no regrets so far.
Not really, because I think everything that happens, it's part of life. You just have to learn to accept reality.
When I was in primary and secondary, I didn't study as the way I was supposed to study. I was just going to school for the purpose of being there, but not learning. So when I finished senior 6, I regretted a lot for wasting the time because there are a lot of important information I could get and I could focus. So that's my regret.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The August 2015 peace deal paved way for the establishment of a hybrid court in South Sudan. But that court has yet to be established while crimes continue to be committed against civilians in a conflict that has triggered Africa's largest refugee crisis. Yasmin Soka, the chairperson of the 3 UN member commission on human rights in South Sudan, tells Ayen Bior that critical evidence is being lost every day as witnesses to crime are being killed or disappear.
The commission that I chair, you know, has also made comments on the fact that we have found the indicators for ethnic cleansing, you know, underway. I mean, when you couple that with what the special envoy on genocide said, I do think that there is cause for concern. And when you study, genocide indicators, it's always under the cover of an ongoing conflict in South Sudan. If you look at the conflict, it's certainly spread now to the Equatorias, and you have a food insecure situation. You have an economic crisis happening with the inflation rate being really staggering. And when you look at the numbers of displaced people, then I think that should give cause for concern and should certainly ring alarm bells. So I am surprised that to date you have very little action taking place to prevent this.
On the topic of investigations, there's been talk about setting up a hybrid court of South Sudan by the African Union. What are your sources at the AU telling you about the establishment of the hybrid court?
Well, I think, as you know, the African Union is tasked by the Peace and Security Council to establish the hybrid court. And from what we know from our sources, apparently draft legislation is, in the making already. But, you know, when we spoke to the court, to the African Union, it was also very clear that the AU Legal Council needs to enter into discussions with the government of South Sudan on the hybrid court, particularly looking at questions of cooperation. And they indicated that they want to sign a memorandum of agreement on the cooperation issue, but to date have not been given permission to go to Juba as yet. And I know that there have been a number of stalled visits at the instance of the government. And so the AU Legal Council, in fact, they stuck because they can't move ahead unless these discussions take place. At the same time, you know, when the commission held its workshop on transitional justice in Addis last week, what was also very clear from many of the participants, particularly civil society and the religious groups, that many of them indicated that for anybody to prepare draft legislation without consulting with a broader South Sudanese community, particularly civil society, this is quite unacceptable. And so I do think there's a need for more participation and more, also, you know, more inclusivity around the discussions which are taking place.
And I understand that your office is working on a report that will be released in mid-March on the human rights situation in South Sudan. What can you tell us about the findings of that report?
Obviously, it's a little difficult to disclose the findings before we've presented them to the Human Rights Council, but our report will cover really two aspects. The one is the human rights situation, including what we've seen in terms of the humanitarian front and the way that's unfolding. And then, of course, the second part of it relates to the second part of our mandate, which is around Chapter 5 of the peace agreement, which deals with the hybrid court, the question of the Commission on Truth, Healing and Reconciliation, and the Commission on the Compensation Commission and Reparations Authority. And, you know, already we have released, I think, two of our main findings or recommendations, and that is that we are deeply concerned that evidence is degrading even as we speak. And if there is a delay in the setting up of the hybrid court, we believe that it's absolutely critical to set up an independent investigation body that can actually go in there, document, collect the evidence, and ensure that it's preserved so that as and when the hybrid court is established, you know, this can be handed over.
That was Yasmin Soka speaking to Ayen Bior earlier today from her office in South Africa. The acting senior women protection advisor at the United Nations mission in South Sudan says South Sudan Army should stop committing crimes against civilians, including rape, if it wants to be recognized as a professional army. A South Sudanese military spokesman says the entire army should not be blamed for the actions of few. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Lodwar, Kenya.
Ruth Kibiti says as long as the SPLA continues to rape women, kill civilians and loot property, it will not be seen as a professional army. Dozens of officers are attending a three-day workshop in Turit on training soldiers to investigate and prosecute colleagues accused of rape. Kibiti says despite several attempts by the UN and other agencies to train the army, several soldiers continue to abuse civilians across the country.
We need to build the capacity of the commanders with responsibility to be able to train their troops, to discipline their troops. The officers who are committing the offenses are the junior officers sometimes. They don't know about international human rights, so they need to be trained to understand that when they commit these crimes, they are putting the country in a difficult situation because they are the official recognized army of the Republic of South Sudan.
Last week, witnesses said SPLA soldiers raped several women in Kubi village of Jubek State's Lokiliri County. Kibiti says rape by SPLA soldiers must end. She says the army has much to gain by being part of international peacekeeping force operating in South Sudan, but that won't happen until SPLA soldiers are professionalized. Kibiti says SPLA soldiers should also stop occupying public institutions such as schools.
Let's work hard to clean our name, that we are clean people and we are protecting the civilians and not raping the civilians.
Brigadier General Ajak Deng Biar is the SPLA's acting deputy chief of staff for moral orientation. He admits some soldiers committed crimes against civilians.
Fearless, we are accepting, you know, feel some individual soldiers, they committed
this crime. That generalized all soldiers. We are making this training for them. We are saying that the crime that you are making alone generalize all soldiers. Some individual, they can also do this, but not all army.
Basir Ali Galam is the acting head of the UNMISS field office in Turid. Basir says his office will continue to train the army on military-civilian relations.
They're not supposed to be committing sexual violence against civilians, so this is to make them take the responsibility that if they commit sexual violence, there will be repercussions, action taken against them. There have been various reports about, you know, sexual violence among the civilian population. That is what has actually prompted it, but we do this as a routine in every country where UN peacekeeping forces operate.
Imotong State Governor Tobiolo Oromo Alberio says it is not too late for the SPLA to start a new beginning. Speaking in Arabic, he urged field commanders to instruct junior officers to abide by their mandate.
If we see that these abuses are being committed, the caliphate must be brought before the law. This is because you are there to help, to rescue. For example, someone falls in fire. You need to take that person out of the fire. That is your responsibility.
Tobiolo says it is a responsibility given to the SPLA by the Constitution, and all SPLA soldiers must fulfill that mandate. The audio for this story was provided by Emmanuel Radio in Turid. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Lodwar, Kenya.
Some South Sudanese parents find it increasingly difficult to pay for the education of their children studying in Uganda due to the harsh economic conditions at home. A Ugandan agricultural-based non-governmental organization has stepped up to offer help to thousands of South Sudanese students to complete their education. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
DARUS was founded as an organization to promote commercial farming in Uganda and help farmers sell their food. In 2014, DARUS launched DARUS Education Development Limited to help children of farmers go to school. Since then, DARUS has branched out into offering scholarships to children in need, displaced persons and cash-strapped refugees across East Africa, all with revenue generated from farming. DARUS Education Development Administrator Ronnie Kabito says DARUS has helped thousands of students continue their education.
For the past 2 years, I have a record of at least estimated number is around 9,000 who have benefited.
Scores of parents and students, most of whom are South Sudanese, flock to the DARUS offices in downtown Kampala each day, hoping to get a full scholarship with their good grades. Kabito says while they want to help as many students as possible, their main goal is to support the most vulnerable.
Then you should be either your parents are disabled, or yourself you're disabled, but you can be able to get some knowledge of education And then the third would be those people who are displaced or refugees. Then the fourth is the category of those financial instability, financially unstable and insecure.
Students like Salama Abui, a South Sudanese, waiting for her turn to meet officials at the Dara's office, falls in the category of urban refugees. Abui completed her secondary school education last year and wants to study journalism. But she says her parents can no longer afford to pay her tuition.
You know the situation of South Sudan? Yeah, because with the fight and the dollar stuff, so we couldn't get enough money to go back to school, so that's why we have come to look for scholarship.
Refugees must present proof of their status before applying for a scholarship. The organization gives priority to students with the best grades. Johnson Hillary, a student at the Makerere University Business School, says as the economic crisis in South Sudan deepens, his sponsor in South Sudan has advised him to seek other sources of funding.
It has been my sister actually paying my school fees, and she's complaining a lot because we are many whom she's paying actually, and she cannot actually manage now.
Gathquot Peter Riek, a student and guardian, hopes Darius will help his two teenage brothers who are struggling to complete secondary school. Riek says he'll understand if their applications are not approved, knowing the stiff competition between candidates.
If this fails, then maybe they'll stay out for a term or two. Then maybe the third term they might join, because it has happened before. They were home like for two terms. They couldn't go to school because there was no fees.
The lucky ones who do win scholarships often must change schools because Darius has contracts with four universities and nine secondary schools. Kabito says the organization follows strict criteria for selecting institutions it partners with.
It should be licensed by the ministry first. We don't deal with the schools not licensed by the Ministry of Education. So if we find that our schools are standard schools, offering standard education, which is offered everywhere.
Kabito expects Dara's Education Development to admit more than 2,000 students into its program for full and partial sponsorship this year, and more than 90% of them will be South Sudanese. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Apiku in Kampala.
That report by Simon Peter from Kampala brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Public Enemy by Ras Corby.
Yes, last year in the King of Israel seen Most High Joe Rastafari. And you don't know anytime righteousness and consciousness come forward. The people always want the kingdom seen. Bless the Most High. Original Rascal, the life and direct of Sudan is liberated. Yeah. Watch it.
They call me a public enemy, because I'm fighting my enemy. Public. A Chinese, I'm proud to be a Southern Sudanese. They call me a public enemy, because I'm fighting my enemy. Public enemy, because I'm fighting my enemy. See, anytime I want to talk about my people's rights, they call me a warrior. Anytime I want to talk about equal rights and justice, they call me a criminal. Don't forget and the present before you make your judgment. Don't forget about the past and the present before you make your judgment. Do you remember the days of slavery when our forefathers were taken across the Atlantic? It was a pity.
We have been listening to Ras Corby with the song Public Enemy. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. We hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. And you know we, yeah.
Yes, you know it, and you know it.